Jesus said, "Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them. Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them." For many people, this is one of their favorite verses of the Bible. I've seen it cross-stitched on pillows. I've seen it printed under photographs of clasped hands with a sunset in the background. We quote it as though it's a promise about comfort. Gather with the people you love and say the name of Jesus, and he'll be there with you. But that's not what Jesus was talking about. Not even close to what Jesus was talking about in the reading today. This verse comes at the end of Jesus's very practical instructions about how to deal with conflict. And not just mild conflict, but intense conflict. Jesus begins, "If another sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone." Two people who've been avoiding an issue are now beginning to address it. And if that doesn't work, Jesus tells us what to do next. "Take one or two others along with you, so that every word may be confirmed by two or three witnesses." Now, whatever happened is out in the open. Other people are involved. And if the conflict still isn't resolved, Jesus says, "Tell it to the church." This means that the wider community is involved and something must be decided. And then Jesus says, "If two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven." The word this gospel uses for agree is symphoneo, the root of our word symphony. Two people who were once in the midst of rising friction and pressure and conflict are learning to symphoneo, to live in harmony. And it's right there in the center of this description of how to deal with conflict that Jesus says, "Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." This is not a promise primarily about Jesus showing up at a rainy Tuesday morning Bible study when just a couple of good friends are there. This is Jesus saying that he will be present in the hard work of reconciliation and repair and rebuilding broken relationships. One of the remarkable claims of our faith is that Jesus was fully divine and also fully human. Fully divine meaning that the wisdom that created the universe is walking around Galilee in sandals, and fully human meaning he knows what real people are like, not in theory, but through experience. He didn't study people from a distance. He lived in the middle of human relationships. He spent 3 years with fishermen and revolutionaries, with doubters and hotheads, with a friend who would deny him and then return, with a friend who would deny him and not. He taught them, he ate with them, he healed them. I imagine he put up with them. So when Jesus speaks about healing relationships, he's taking the deepest truths of God and translating them into the gritty, the practical, everyday moments of our lives. And that's exactly what's happening in this passage we read today, Matthew 18. Wisdom incarnate, imparting information, wisdom, to real people. In this chapter, before we get into the reading we heard today, We open with one of the disciples asking Jesus, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Not asking, "How do we serve more? How do we love better?" But, who's the greatest? These were real people around Jesus with real egos. They had real disagreements. Think about it. Matthew was a tax collector for Rome. Simon, called the Zealot, probably wanted to topple Rome, and Jesus put them in a boat together, eating together, walking together, sleeping side by side, no personal space, no way to get away from one another. 12 disciples, 3 years, one rabbi. I know it sounds like a great setup for Bravo's newest reality TV show, but these were real people. No wonder there was conflict, and probably a lot of it, which means they had to have a way to work through the conflict. And maybe that's why Jesus was teaching this in the first place. It's not abstract theology. It's practical, down-to-earth, real-world advice for real people. Jesus is teaching the disciples and us how to build bridges, how to heal wounds, how to repair relationships. But in the 21st century, and especially in America, we seem to have built a culture around the opposite principle. We've perfected the ability to push other people away from us. Today, you can mute someone, unfollow someone, block someone, leave the group chat. And it isn't just online. People cut off parents or children or brothers or sisters. Sometimes one conversation is enough to end a relationship. Researchers at Cornell found that about 1 in 4 Americans is estranged from a close relative, and 1 in 10 is estranged from a parent or a child. We are among the most connected people who've ever lived, and yet we are remarkably good at the art of disconnecting and distancing. And perhaps the problem isn't that we've lost the ability to make relationships. Instead, it's that we've lost the ability to keep working at them when things get uncomfortable and difficult. When a relationship becomes difficult, we see people do one of three things. Some of us just cut off. We leave, not always physically, but relationally. We stop calling, we stop showing up, we go quiet, and eventually we're gone. Some of us cave. We stay in the relationship, but we bite our tongue to our own detriment. We surrender our convictions. We keep the peace by giving up our own voice. And some of us dominate. We don't want to work it out. We need to win. These are the three moves: walk away, give in, or bulldoze someone else. And yet Jesus calls us to something different. He doesn't say, cut them off and move on. He doesn't say, ignore your convictions to keep the peace. He doesn't say, force them to agree with you. He instead says, go to them. Alone, and then with others, and then if necessary with the entire community. But every step of his prescription assumes that you're still seeking reconciliation, still working to rebuild the relationship. Notice what surrounds this passage when two or three are gathered in my name. Just before it, Jesus tells the story about a shepherd who left 99 sheep to go after the one who was lost. And immediately after it, Peter asks Jesus, how many times must I forgive? 7? And Jesus says, no, 70 times 7 times. In other words, Matthew puts this difficult passage, this difficult teaching, right between the story of a shepherd who won't stop looking for the last sheep and the story about forgiveness that refuses to keep score, both stories about working again and again and again to be in relationship. And even the hardest line of this reading, when Jesus says what to do with the person who wronged you and who is recalcitrant and won't work to heal the relationship, Jesus says, let that one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. To the Jewish community of that day, the Gentiles and tax collectors were outcasts. This passage can sound like it's Jesus saying, if someone continues to be recalcitrant and is not willing to move towards reconciliation, you can eventually cut them off, treat them like an outcast, treat them like a Gentile and a tax collector. But remember, Matthew, after whom this gospel is named, had been a tax collector. The Bible makes it very clear that the Gentiles and tax collectors were never the people who Jesus was finished with and ready to cut off and treat as outcasts. They were the people Jesus was looking for. Jesus is telling us that if there's a chance to mend a broken connection or heal a wounded relationship, we should commit to the work of trying to do that. We should treat the person who's wronged us the exact same way as Jesus treated tax collectors and Gentiles, meaning with love and compassion. Now, I can imagine that some of you are thinking, those are pretty words, that's a nice sentiment, but you don't know my situation. And you're right, I don't. But notice that in this passage, Jesus is very realistic. He doesn't start with everyone gathering around a fire and singing kumbaya. He starts by saying, if one has sinned against you, Jesus recognizes that something has gone wrong, really wrong, sin. And he suggests over the course of this passage a few practical ways, three practical ways to address the situation. First, walk up the stairs one at a time. Talk to that person, first one-on-one. If that doesn't work, then take the next step. Bring somebody in. If it's a challenge with your marriage, that's maybe a counselor. If it's a challenge with your parents or siblings, that's maybe a family therapist. If it's a friend where there's conflict, maybe bring in someone you both trust. And if that doesn't work, take the next step. Widen the circle. In other words, Jesus lays out a sequence, not meant to be a rigid legal procedure, but a posture. Try again, try once more in a different way. Second, Jesus recognizes that reconciliation is not the same as agreement. Sometimes there are problems that can't be solved. You see the world one way, I see it another, but completely agreeing on everything was never the goal. Jesus says that if you work everything out, you have gained a brother or a sister. And you can gain a brother who you don't agree with. You can gain a sister and still not talk about politics over Thanksgiving dinner. Repairing a relationship doesn't mean seeing eye to eye or even becoming best friends. It means refusing to treat the other person as an enemy. And third, Jesus does leave the door open for some things, sometimes, to end. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. There are some relationships that cannot be repaired and some that should not be resumed. If you're being hurt, if you're being abused or mistreated, Jesus is not asking you to go back into danger. Jesus acknowledges that there is a time and there is a place, in his words, to loose on earth. There is a time to let go. But even then, we shouldn't do it in hatred, not with a door slammed forever. You can let a person go without letting go of the truth that they too are a beloved child of God. You can release a person from your life without surrendering your capacity for compassion. So hear this verse once more, but in the proper context where it actually belongs. When two or three are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them. I am there among them. Not simply in the room where everyone is comfortable, the living room with the family you love, or Tolliver Hall after church with people you care about, or dinner with a best friend, but the place where two people who have been hurt have decided to stay instead of leave. Matthew's gospel opens with a name for Jesus, Emmanuel, God is with us. And it closes with the promise, I am with you always to the end of the age. And right there in the middle, in this chapter about doing the hardest work in our relationships, Jesus says, I am there among them. The beginning, the middle, the end. God is with us. God is with us when things are challenging. God is with us always. 2,000 years ago, Jesus made a promise. Not that he would show up when things are easy. Not that he would show up at a sweet, intimate Bible study when it's raining and just a couple people are there. But that in the pressure, in the friction, in the hard conversations, he would be there among us. Jesus doesn't promise to meet us just in comfort. He promises to meet us in the difficult work of rebuilding and repairing and reconciling. Amen.